Welcome to Disruptive Adventism. My name is Jose Briones, and I'll be your host for this podcast. This podcast is about discussing the polemical statements and practices that are part of the Adventist fabric, which in turn shape this belief system to be unique and relevant for today's society. Our discussion today focuses on the topic of the military. This is one out of two interviews that we had with two Adventist veterans. We hope you enjoy it, and with nothing else to say, let us begin.
Thanks for tuning in again, everyone. Today, we're going to have a little bit of a different topic, a little bit of a trigger warning here. It's going to be a sensitive topic, so we just want you to listen and be attentive and to know that the discussion that we're having here is an honest discussion and seeing how we can address this topic of the military. So we're going to be talking about the military and Adventism and what's the relationship between them. We're going to be having a special guest, a veteran of the Marine Corps, Floyd Harmon, and here he is with us. So how's it going, Floyd?
Going very well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for allowing us to interview you for a little bit and to have a couple of minutes to discuss this important topic. So before we start, tell us about your service, who you are, where you're from, where were you born, and how do you get involved in the military?
Well, my full name is Cody Floyd Harmon. I was born in a little old town in South Carolina called Gilbert. And my family has been there for a number of generations on both my mother and my father's side. I have a number of people on both sides of the family that have served in the military. It's not uncommon for us. Probably more on my father's side than on my mother's, but nevertheless, there are veterans on both sides. At a young age, I'd say probably 4 or 5, I saw my cousin Ben come home from Parris Island, Marine Corps Recruit Training Depot. Marine Corps boot camp is what it was. He was in his dress blues, and I knew even at that age I wanted to be a Marine. And that was during the time of the first Gulf War, back in the early 90s, in 1991. And so that led to, that gave me a desire to be in the military, and I knew which branch I wanted to be in. And by the time I was 17, I had signed up with my parents' permission. And by 18, after I graduated high school, I went straight to Parris Island for boot camp, and that's how it started.
Awesome. Well, you know, before we delve deep into the discussion, let's kind of start with some definitions for those listeners that may not know, that maybe from other countries, you know, and are not acquainted with the military system here in the United States. You have different branches, right? Army, Navy, Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. What are some of the differences? And just give us a succinct definition of each.
Okay. Well, to starters, we understand that all the armed forces are not merely intended for combat actions. That's their primary purpose. That's where they find their own. But they're also used in humanitarian actions as well. When the natural disasters happen around the world, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, all of these people respond and can respond to helping the disaster. The Air Force, the name gives it away. It's primarily they dominate the air for combat services and things like that. Everything that they have in their machine revolves around the aircraft being utilized in service. The Navy operates primarily by sea. They also have sea to land and land to sea forces. Historically, their role has changed between, you know, from, you know, hardcore battleships and destroyers and things. Those still exist, but the way they're utilized in combat situations is much different these days. But they are primarily service from the sea, all right? The Army is our primary ground force when it comes to fighting force and whatnot. They deploy primarily in that area. And they have all kinds. They have air force, they have ground forces. You know, there's a lot of elements that are similar throughout these things. The Marine Corps is actually a branch of the Navy. Maybe not everybody knows that. They actually operate on a percentage of the Navy's budget every year. And they're primarily intended for an assault force these days, operating from sea to land, and they can occupy, but their training is a little more intense than the average soldier or sailor in other branches, but they all have specific niches, if you will, for their service. So a little difference. The rank structure is similar between Army and Marine Corps, but not the same. The Navy has a rank structure all its own, and the Air Force is also similar to the Army and the Marine Corps as well, but with subtle differences.
All right. Well, thanks again for that succinct definition and for allowing us to kind of get a picture of what it is. So you serve as a Marine, correct?
Yes.
So you serve as a Marine. How many years did you serve?
4 years.
4 years. Awesome. Now, as an Adventist, right? You're an Adventist. You serve in the military. Before we get into more of the discussion, whether it's right or wrong, whether you should do it or not, is there a relationship between the military and Adventism? Is there a relationship, like a working relationship between them?
I would say yes, on a couple of different fronts. Starting as far back as the Civil War, and I actually think it was the year, I think specifically 1864, don't quote me on that, but it was around the latter part of the Civil War where Adventism was able to achieve a non-combatancy status with the military. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just Adventists. There were other groups that were there as well, but they were involved that way. They became acquainted in that way at that time. Since then, Adventists have served in some very magnificent roles in all branches of service. The Adventist chaplaincy is very strong. Adventists serving the medical corps is very strong. So I would say that there is quite a healthy and strong and known relationship between Adventism and the military. And I would also add, despite the trials that certain ones have had to endure being Adventists in the military, I believe that their character and the level of service that has been offered has been exemplary, and I don't think anyone would argue with that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that kind of description and kind of helping us understand. There has been a connection between the military and Adventism since early stages in the Adventist Church, and now we see it with people serving. Now, as someone who spent time in the military and that knows Adventist doctrine, right, that understands Adventist doctrine, do you think it's important for Adventists to serve in the military, or should Adventists remain, maybe staying on their lane in the religious side of things? How do you see that interaction?
I don't ascribe military service personally. I want to add one little disclaimer before we go any further with all that covers the rest of what we're going to talk about in this session. I don't ever want to take the position to be so solidified in any position that I discourage any man or that I leave no room for myself to grow. I do have a subjective point of view, no doubt about it. I have my opinion and I have evidences for it, but I don't believe it's absolute. And I hope that I'm willing to let the Lord lead me as my life goes on and walking with Him. That being said, I do have an opinion. But it can be movable. So, but where I'm at currently, I do not see any particular organization of people obligated to military service. And if I can be more clear, just because you're an Adventist or a Baptist or a white or a African American or any particular people group, you're not prescribed to the military because you're a part of a group. I believe military service should be had on or should be entered into on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. Without getting into a discussion about whether the draft is necessary or moral or right or whatever, forget that for now. I think that a person should be left to their own conscience as to whether or not they would like to serve in the military. Mm-hmm. I have several reasons, but I think the biggest reason is because if someone has not volunteered their service, then the level of service that they're going to provide is not going to be at its best, perhaps. And worse, the highest form of that would be in a combat situation, putting someone's life in jeopardy because you're not wholly committed to your duty and your purpose in the military. Mm-hmm. So I believe that it should be an individual decision as to whether you should go into the military. Could you repeat your question, please?
Yes, my question was mainly addressing, like, let's say that we have an Adventist young man, right? He's trying to go into the military or struggling with the decision. How do we guide with Adventist principles into that conversation? Mm-hmm. Do we encourage the military service or do we not encourage military service? You pointed towards maybe it's an individual decision, but let's say that someone's struggling. How do we go about it then?
Okay. I have been approached a number of times by parents and young people asking about whether or not they or their children should join the military. Mm-hmm. And with varying views. The first thing as an Adventist pastor, when I see someone who is making a decision, trying to make a decision, they're in the decision-making process, they're not really sure. The first thing that I want to ascertain is their spiritual health. Mm. How strong are they? How grounded are they in their faith? Because if you intend to be a member of the military and also practice your faith, you're going to have challenges, particularly in Adventism, that are going to be perhaps more intense than others will have because of our particular convictions. I think of a very simple one being our stance on Sabbath and Sabbath observance. Mm-hmm. All right, that will be challenged. Being a Christian, period, in the military, no matter what denominational background you may have, being a Christian in the military is not easy. The lifestyle and the values that are promoted there are somewhat, shall we say, unbecoming at times if you're going to follow the lifestyle that is usually led and promoted in the military. The Marine Corps, I think, particularly, we have a long history of drinking being a part of military of the Marine Corps family, not just because it's something that worldly people do and enjoy. The Marine Corps was born in a bar in Pennsylvania, Tun Tavern, November the 10th, 1775. And so as part of our foundational history, to drink is part of being a Marine. Now, some people may not agree. I don't want to carry that out to an extreme point, but it is strong. My point is that it is strongly associated with being a Marine.
And that may be of difficulty for Adventists because we believe in abstaining from alcohol. Sure. Like, you know, so again, my point is, or my idea that I'm kind of struggling here is like, so the encouragement should come on basis of spiritual level of the individual.
Yes, and the reason for that is if a person is wavering or weak in their faith now, joining the military is not going to help that more than likely. Is it possible that God can reach them and strengthen them in that area? Yes, there is no place that is that's off limits to God as far as his being able to influence a person. But that, I would say, is not a safe practice. First priority for a Christian is their relationship with God. That is the first thing. And if joining the military is going to challenge that, impede that, or even possibly destroy that, then my advice to them as a spiritual leader is you need to wait and grow some more in your spiritual life, become grounded in your spiritual life before you make a decision to join for that purpose.
That's an excellent recommendation. I think that it kind of speaks to the importance of being spiritually healthy and the importance of understanding what you're signing up for when you're signing up for the military. Now, to further and continue going with a couple of the positive aspects of the military, let's talk about some of the things that you learn or that others can learn by joining the military as an Adventist. What are some of the positive things that can come out?
Well, I tell you, there's several things that come to my mind immediately. Leadership, discipline, and teamwork that you can learn from the military. It can build you in those areas if you're weak in those areas. As a matter of fact, the military is very proactive and intentional about building leaders. I think more particular for Adventists. Now, this is not every case, but I know a great percentage of Adventists that you come up to that 18, 19, 20-year-old age where most people are joining or thinking about joining the military. A lot of Adventists have been kept sort of in the Adventist world all their life and haven't had a whole lot of exposure to people of other faiths, of other belief systems, other worldviews. And again, this is not a blanket statement. I know that there are those who are, but there is a large percentage who have spent their entire life coming through homeschool, coming through academies, coming through Adventist educational institutions, and haven't interacted with a lot of these people. So going to the military where you're going to be around people of all kinds of national and ethnic backgrounds. My platoon had Asians, we had Latin Americans, we had Europeans, we had Africans, we had people from the Caribbean, we had it all. Mm-hmm. We were a melting pot in that platoon. Also, there were Buddhists, there were Muslims, there were atheists, there were all kinds of people from cities, people from the country, people from all kinds of professional backgrounds, blue collar backgrounds. And that will expose you to different kinds of people to know how to, if I can use the expression, to rub elbows with people, to know how to see things from different perspectives and to get a little perspective yourself on other people's lives, way of lives, ways of seeing things that can be helpful in your Christian walk, whether it's witnessing. Hey, you know, I knew a guy in the military that was your ethnicity, your faith background, and this has helped me now have a conversation with a guy on a bus that I met, you know, going to, you know, to the museum or going to work one day or something. So I think particularly that is the variety is one of the biggest benefits that most Adventists would probably be able to enjoy from military service, apart from the leadership, the teamwork, and discipline awesome. Aspects.
Thanks a lot for...
And job skills, but we won't elaborate on that, but right. Job skills as well.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, myself, I'm somewhat versed with how the military, I have some family, I have served in the military, but, you know, I've never been, so it's kind of like, it's a different area. Now, we talked about a couple about the positive aspects. Not everything is positive about the military.
True.
And what are some of the negative aspects that you encounter yourself in your experience, mm-hmm. or something that may make us reconsider, like, you know, our value, like, hey, you know, what do I want to do? Because I think that what you're saying is very important, you know, having the ability to interact with different kinds of people and maybe being a disruptive force for their spirituality as an Adventist. Like, you know, as you're saying, if you're very committed to Adventism, if you're very a very committed Christian, it can allow you to reach those people, whereas they will never be reached if no one was there that was an Adventist. However, not everything is positive. You know, there are challenges that need to be met with. We spoke about the Sabbath. That's one of the challenges. And maybe alcoholism as well. Like that can mm-hmm. be another challenge. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that may discourage someone from looking at a perspective and saying, I want to join?
Okay, the lifestyle outside of the military aspect. When I say military aspect, I mean strictly the professional military aspect. When you join, you join and you have a job, what they call it, an MOS, and so you may be a diesel mechanic, you may be an administrative person, you may be a crew chief on a helicopter crew, you may be an infantryman, military police. You have a profession that they're training you to work at in a professional manner. So apart from the professional aspect, the lifestyle that surrounds mm-hmm. the military is very heavily, it's a party lifestyle in a lot of ways. Mm. And so if you are a Christian that has high Christian morals that are based on biblical principles, the premarital sex, involvement with, you know, drinking alcohol, the Sabbath issue, things that you may fill your time with, reading movies, different things that you might feed your soul with, so to speak, with the extracurricular activities that you can be involved in. Not that that's the only things that they ever do. I had some very good times doing some very nice things, but that lifestyle is very heavy mm-hmm. and it has a tendency to influence very heavy because this is the big thing. There are no individuals in the military. Individuals in the military usually crumble or they go crazy. They don't come out very clean because it's a camaraderie. You live with these people. You work with these people. You go through the worst of times and the best of times with these people. Some of them may be the only family that certain ones have ever had. And some of them who have family find that these men and women become closer even than family members that they have. And so there is this desire inside to want to belong, to want to please. Not necessarily just to go along with the crowd, but because you care about these individuals and you want to have their trust. And so these environments where they're encouraging you to come and be a part of, these activities they want you to partake of, it's a much stronger pull than just the thrill of doing them. It's a part of a social relational network. Mm. And if you have high Christian biblical morals and principles, these will be compromised. These things will be challenged mm-hmm. In that social environment.
Okay. That's very interesting that you mentioned that. You know, as you're mentioning that, I can definitely think how that may be earth-shattering or changing a little bit of the worldview mm-hmm. for an Adventist. Now, let's talk about, and this is part of the trigger warning that we gave in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, there's another element to the military. And I mean, you served, I haven't served, so I kind of want to understand that aspect. You are you required to carry guns, for example?
Jose, let me say one more thing about what we just came from.
Yes.
Very briefly. I said that beliefs can be challenged and even compromised. What I will say is that for the Christian of any denomination or any other person from another faith background, whatever it may be, says to your social group, your platoon, your squad, who are the guys that you're hanging out with, your seamen, airmen, soldiers, Marines, if you say to those people, this is who I am, I am a Christian, these are the values that I have, and you stick to the values, they may think to themselves, well, those are kind of weird, that's kind of strange, but because you do what you say, you still have my respect.
Mm.
I've seen that. You do what you say, I don't agree, I think you're weird, you might be some jokes, but you're still my brother, you're still my sister, you're still my, you're still my my fellow Marine or soldier, sailor, airman, and I can respect you, I can trust you. When you say I'm a Christian or a Buddhist or a Muslim and these are my values and your actions
do not
measure up to your words, that's when you have issues.
Hmm.
Even, okay, I say I'm a Christian, but I'm still going along with what everybody else is doing. You have discredited yourself, not just your religion. You've discredited yourself, your personal integrity. So I just wanted to add that. Didn't mean to interrupt. So being true to it has its advantages. Now, you're asking about whether or not it's required for every person who joins the military to carry a weapon. I believe in every branch of service during boot camp and basic training, everyone is trained
mm-hmm.
on a weapon. It is very uncommon that a person will go through and not be trained on a weapon. You have the stories that the recent movie Hacksaw Ridge, the story of Desmond Doss, who even in his basic training refused to train with a rifle. I think these days, because that conscientious objector status is more understood, it might not be such a challenge. But by and large, it is assumed that when you go through these types of training, you will be trained on a weapon. Your job that you're signing up for, perhaps, let's say you're a diesel mechanic, may not necessarily require you to handle a weapon on a daily basis. But when you go into a combat situation and you have to leave the safe, you're assigned a weapon. Everyone is issued a weapon that you're expected to maintain, and whenever you go into certain situations, you have that weapon with you, unless you have ascribed the conscientious objector status to yourself.
Okay. Now, before you continue in this line, let's explain what is the conscientious objector mm-hmm. status. What is that status?
Conscientious objector, and please don't hold me to the letter on this. This is off the top of my head. As I understand it, means that you are willingly cooperating with the general mission and standards of the military, but you also willingly reject the use of force to take human life.
Mm-hmm.
And AKA, you choose not to carry a weapon in your role in your military service.
Okay.
It may be broader than just the weapon. I'm not sure. I would have to check it out. But I know that that's the general idea.
The general gist of conscientious objector, yeah. Let's kind of grapple with one more area when it comes to guns, when it comes to military service. A lot of the media or a lot of the images, videos, or that we see portrayed in the military are for combat. You know, we seldom see, or very, very rarely, we see what you said, that the military is also part of relief, mm-hmm. part of helping to relieve mm-hmm. communities in part. So when it comes to these, combating images and taking life, right, for an Adventist, right, that ascribes to the ideas of every human life being valuable mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Jesus being kind of like, he's a pacifist of sorts, he kind of tries to take the non-confrontational way, not non-confrontational, but non-violence, because mm-hmm. Jesus was definitely confrontational.
Sure.
But violence doesn't seem to be portrayed profusely in the Gospels mm-hmm. for a specific reason, because he was more pacifist in a sense. I think that the only example that we have is when he goes into the temple and then
overturns the table,
and even then it's not violence against
people.
The people, but it's violence against the tables, I guess, sure. in this case, you know. But when it comes to the issue of violence, right, how do Adventists get through that hoop, per se? How do we understand, can I go and be violent, or should I go and just kind of participate of these other activities that mm-hmm. are helping people? How do we reconcile that?
I'll give you kind of a general answer, and then I'm going to give you my stance.
Okay.
First off, if you already know, if you have decided in your own personal convictions that violence is not something that you want to be a part of and partake in, then I would say you need to be proactive and achieving the conscientious objector status. Mm-hmm. Hold that principle from the beginning, because it's very hard to switch over in the midst of things, okay? I don't see that that's as difficult of an issue if you have already made that decision. I think most Adventists struggle with whether or not it's acceptable, moral, to participate in violent action, combat action, which is where I'm going to give you now a little bit of my own views and my opinions. I agree wholly that while Jesus is on earth, you don't see him lifting his hand to harm an individual. However, throughout biblical history, you see him utilizing militaries and armies to accomplish purposes that he has set forth. Mm. Okay? And leave that aside for a moment and think, and forget about military service for just a second. Even in our, here in the civilian world, we employ a police force for security reasons. And they have a specific goal, a specific job to do. The Lord's hand, the Lord is the source of all the things that we have, that we've been given as a nation and as a people and everything else, but he utilizes human instrumentalities to obtain these things. Here in this nation, we enjoy freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and could the Lord have just spoke that into existence for us? Of course. But the way our history plays out, it was not the way that it happened by use of military force, combat arms. It was established and, I might add, maintained. For me personally, I see it as I'll use a strong word, so please forgive me, but I see it as a hypocritical notion that I will enjoy freedoms that was established by men and women who were willing to take up arms and lay down their lives if necessary. We enjoy those freedoms, but we're not willing to also participate in that same action. If you have a military of nothing but medics, that's not going to be able to establish a whole lot of security for the people in this nation. To have the idea that I will just leave that dirty work to the heathen or to those who don't know any better, and I will walk on a higher plane, personally, I don't see it as compatible with ethics and morals.
Okay.
If I'm going to enjoy a freedom, I should also be willing to do what is necessary to procure it and to keep it and to save it for others. If I am going to be in the business of saving other lives, if I'm going to be in the business of liberating other oppressed peoples and whatnot, then it will require more than just being a medic or a cook. You know, all these things are very important. I will not undermine the importance of medical service, because they have saved lots and lots of lives. And really, in combat, it's not about taking life, but ultimately it is about saving life.
Mm-hmm.
So not to undermine these positions at all, but for an Adventist that is struggling with the decision of whether or not it is moral for me to be able to take up combat arms in a combat situation, like I said earlier, I think it's an individual decision you need to make between you and the Lord and your own personal convictions. But me, as I have seen how God has worked in the past in biblical history, how he uses human instrumentalities to do things that are hard but for the good, I personally do not have an issue with taking up arms to serve in the military service on those grounds. I could elaborate, but I know our time is short, and I feel like I'm really working hard to cut a lot out.
No, I understand, you know, we only have a certain amount of time, but Yes, it's a little bit of a struggle, you know, sure. Like as I'm listening to you, I'm also like struggling. I have a more pacifist approach, sure. And you know, we sure. are going to also, we speak about that in other podcasts, you know, when it comes to the pacifist mm-hmm. option, right? Now, maybe as we start closing, what is a proper recommendation, like, you know, for us to kind of engage with the military? Like, you know, there are people there that need to be saved. You know, there are people there that we kind of need to engage and help. But how do we make it compatible? How do we, like you said, stay faithful, you know, in our service? Mm-hmm. Let it be that you go into the military. Let it be that you are close to a military base. Let it be that you are, you know, interacting with people that come from different branches. How do we help the military? How do we make sure to minister and not forget that these are people as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have some.
I'm going to tell you something. I was not walking with the Lord as a Christian when I was in my military service, and I have regretted it very much because as I look back on that time, I saw a multitude of witnessing opportunities that were ripe that I passed up. Mm. You don't have to be in the military to minister to military, but I'm going to tell you something. If you've ever been in the military, anyone who listens to the sound of my voice knows this to be true. It's very difficult to relate to someone about military things who has never been in the military, who has never served in that capacity, whether it be in combat or not. It does something to you, your mindset, the way you see things. And so while you don't have to be in the military to be able to minister to the military, it opens up doors for you to minister if you have been involved in military service. Doors that may not otherwise be opened, all right? And you will have opportunities that you won't have otherwise while they're in military, if you are also in military service. You have opportunities there that you have no other time because it's in those very stressful moments, those when you're far away from home, you're going through some of the hardest times of your life, that people become susceptible, that they come open, they give you an in to their heart and to their lives, what's going on with them, and you have an opportunity there like no other you'll ever have to be able to touch someone for Christ, to stand and speak for Jesus and to show them the love of Jesus.
That's interesting way, the way you put it. To me, it just kind of like allows me to see that there's another world out there that, you know, I may not be aware of. And I think that, you know, as I continue, you know, reflecting on what you're saying, it's like, yeah, I mean, there's a part of me that's like, yes, we need to serve and we need to kind of continue to look for helping the military or helping, you know, in the sense of helping the people in the military.
Sure, sure.
And then there's a part of me that's like, oh man, like I'm more of like a pacifist kind of person. And I'm like, I'm kind of against the military. So I have this struggle, but I think this conversation is helping me understand it better and kind of look at it from a different perspective, from the eyes of somebody that has been there, you know, and I hope that that's something that our listeners are also engaging as they're listening to you. Before we go into the final word, I want to ask one more question, maybe related to the idea of the Bible and what does it speak about the military, or if it does speak about military service or people that were in service. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
We understand that God meets people where they are. It's one thing for him to walk, for him to find you currently in a situation, and another for you to enter into a situation. But that being said, I find it interesting. There are a number of things. The Bible says a lot to do. Says a lot about military service and people who serve. I find it very intriguing that Jesus ascribed the greatest faith he had ever seen, even amongst his own people, was in the Roman centurion, a professional soldier. Also, John the Baptist, when he was preaching, there were Roman soldiers who came to the river and said, you know, what should we do? You know, after they heard these things, they were convicted. And he didn't tell them, stop serving in the military. Now, perhaps it might not have been an option for the Romans to be able to make that decision. I understand there are practical things, contextual things you need to look at, but he didn't tell them to stop doing that. He said, be content with your wages. Be fair with the people that you rule over, you know, things like this. David, a man who shed so much blood that God said, you can't build my sanctuary, but you are a man after my own heart. Father Abraham raised up an army within his own household to go and take back Lot. And he was not diplomatic about that. He went and took them back by force. There's a number of other things we could talk about. And also, I'll just say one other plug, that during military service, let's use the Battle of Jericho, they marched around that city for 7 days. It doesn't say that they took a break for the Sabbath and marched around on an eighth day. 7 days they were involved in this military action. I do know, I'm aware, that God is the one who sent them on this military action. Mm-hmm. And that is something to be considered when you're trying to figure these things out. The point is that military service seems to be, number one, something a little bit special when it comes to considering points of moral integrity and implications. And secondly, Jesus does not seem, God does, in the Old Testament or in the New, does not seem to condemn those who served in the military, but spoke highly of them.
That's very interesting that you mentioned that. And it makes me think of different examples, and maybe we need to engage a little bit deeper when it comes to this question, right? Like, you know, sometimes as Adventists, we may fall in the pit of just disregarding, you know, like, mm-hmm. oh, well, you know, military combat, we associate it with death, therefore that's evil. Mm-hmm. But we may need to understand that there, like you said, you know, we have the centurion who learned and who was maybe influenced by those who were surrounding him, and that were, for example, the Jews that were surrounding him. Like, so he learned of the message of Christ, of the message of, you know, the Christians that, sure. that were converted there. So I think that really helps me to put it in perspective and to see that God's going to reach people even when they may be doing something that they don't understand themselves, mm-hmm. or that, you know, maybe he's going to send people to there, like Adventist chaplains, to serve and to reach and give them the good news that Jesus is coming soon. Well, thanks, Floyd. We appreciate that you took the time to be with us and to speak about this important topic. Before we go, though, we always give our guests one last time to kind of give us like a final word on military service in this case. And what do you recommend for people that may be struggling with that? You know,
my recommendation, I think, is very simple. I'll try to make it very simple. Make Christ the priority in everything that you do. Ask the question if military service will help or hamper your relationship with Jesus Christ. If you decide that you are spiritually healthy enough to go through with military service, walk close as you can, and be aware of those around you who need what only a servant of Christ can give them while in military service. Look for those ministry opportunities. You won't have to look hard. You won't have to look far. But walk as close as you possibly can, making Christ first priority in everything. Let him be your moral guide in these decisions. And don't go against God. Do not make a decision until you know that you have gotten guidance from God on it. If it's still a question mark, don't proceed. You may make a decision you regret.
That was our conversation about the military with Cody Floyd Harmon. We hope that you learned something about Adventism and the military system in the United States. Please continue to tune in to our Law & Order series as we come back to interview another Adventist veteran on our next podcast. Thank you for listening today. We appreciate that you have taken the time to listen to our podcast and ask that you share it with others. Please leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcatching app. If you're enjoying our content, we want to invite you to consider contributing to our cause by becoming a patron, where you will receive exclusive content, have the ability to sit down with the Disruptive Adventism team, and ask relevant questions for Adventism and society. If you're interested in contributing, head to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. Another avenue for contribution is to purchase our merchandise through Amazon or tpublic.com. You can find the links to our merchandise on our Facebook or Instagram pages. We also hope that our content has intrigued you a little bit and that you decide to stay around for future podcasts. If you have any comments, feedback, or a topic you would like us to discuss, please go to our website at www.disruptiveadventism.org or shoot us an email to disruptiveadventism@gmail.com. We're eager to engage in discussions about any matter, so don't hesitate to contact us. This has been it for today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.